Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey everybody, welcome to Dank Discussions. Today we're joined by Mergers and Acquisition Advisor and Cannabis Executive Galen Williams. Thanks for joining us today, Galen.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. We're across the world. Yes, sir. I'm over here in now dark Tel Aviv, and let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
I'm in Southern California, an undisclosed quarantine location in Southern California.
Yeah, exactly. LA area. We don't want to let it. It's so funny. We're talking off air about The Last Dance, right? And about I haven't seen it yet, but that's after Tiger King, this is the next thing that everybody's been on. But a whole different motivation, a whole different obviously story, and fascinating obviously with Michael Jordan. But you were talking about that was his whole thing, right? He's like, I'm gonna do interviews not from my house and not from here. So, right.
Yeah, just. It wasn't on the video. I assumed it was in his house, but I was reading about it, probably like a lot of people. And I found out that, yes, he wouldn't allow interviews at his home or on his private jet. I don't have the jet yet, but yes, this interview is at a friend's location, just like Michael Jordan. Take what you want from that.
Keyword, yet. But, that's the whole thing, right? I mean, he's very particular about, obviously, his image, and all the greats are in so many ways.
Yes, right.
And, I guess he even agreed to this after after the Cavaliers won their last championship and people started talking about, is LeBron as good as MJ? He was like, all right, baby, release it.
Let's do right. Exactly.
Like, we got to get this. We got to get this out of everybody's thoughts. That's,
he's still competitive about his legacy, but yes, at that level, privacy is key. So I totally understand. And that we were talking about where you were raised up and an area I'm familiar with. And yeah, when you've been in the public spotlight, you want privacy. So I can understand why he would want to interview elsewhere. But anyway.
100%. We can sit here and talk sports all day, but, we're here to talk about cannabis. So, a few things we want to touch on today is obviously, your story. You have a great story. You have extensive background, not only in this industry, but in business in general, and experience. And really excited to hear about that. But also, talking about diversity in the cannabis space from the bottom all the way up, what we're missing there, and also talking about what kind of we're missing here, being able to talk about different companies, it's not per se specifically, but bigger, broader topics that we see facing in the industry and that we're not always able to address. So we're gonna be able to address some very cool topics today. Awesome.
Great.
But let's start off with yourself. Like I said, you have a lot of great experience, been here in the industry for a while now. But I'd love to hear from you. What is your story?
I'll give the high overview. And if we want more details, I guess we'll dive in as time permits. But I guess the high overview is I was raised up in a family business. I consider it my first startup. There was no term called startups then, nor was there a term for entrepreneurship. Then it was just, your dad's got a business, and if your dad's working, you got a business. The kids are employed by default, and poorly paid, I might add, poorly paid. But
labor. My dad, same thing with my dad. When you have kids, you do the same thing to them.
So. Exactly. When I would act out at school or what, my dad would say, "Look, you could act right in school, or you can get in this truck with me." He had his own little company truck or whatnot. So in all due seriousness, raised up in a family business. I didn't know any other way. It was my first startup. So I know about the doing demos. My dad had a janitorial supply company. So instead of a software demo or a product demo, you would go to a grocery store, spend all night putting on your, high-end wax, which using your high-end floor machines to demonstrate that you had this great product. So that was my first product demos or samples, was being in a grocery store all night with high polymer floor wax. That's my start, my first startup. Did very well for a while, but like a lot of good stories, there's tragedy. So my dad had a business partner that was diagnosed with colon cancer. From diagnosis to his transition was about 24 months, almost to the week, I believe, if I recall correctly. And that had a significant impact on me personally, my family. our friends. We employed, my dad employed friends, family from the local church, the community. It was devastating. It really was. And I know that that was one of the reasons why I wanted to study business. Oh. I was young enough for it to be very impressionable and impactful on me. I was old enough to understand what was going on, but too young to really do anything about it. So I said, you know, I'm going to go to business school so that I can just mitigate maybe some of these risks that have become very apparent post my dad's experience. So I went to DePaul University, which at the time had one of the few entrepreneurship programs in the country. It was like a top 10 part-time MBA in entrepreneurship. And I got an undergrad there studying under the professor that started entrepreneurship for family businesses in Chicago. So always had an interest in entrepreneurship and startups. And post-graduation, I worked in business development, ended up going back to the school for my MBA at the University of Chicago, where I founded the city's largest angel group, Hyde Park Angels, which is still in existence today. Got a reputation for startups, worked with an angel investor for a startup for an indoor farm called Sky Greens. I was working at Morgan Stanley at the time as a wealth manager, traded my Brooks Brothers shirts for flannels and rubber boots, and learned to grow greens. And then we obviously pivoted to cannabis when the laws changed. And since about 2013, 2014, I've been working in the legal cannabis space, which required me to move out to California most recently for a C-level role in the cannabis industry. So since about 2014, I've been in the cannabis space, Colorado, West Coast, advising, consulting, and working on behalf of investors to maximize their cannabis investment.
Amazing. Yeah, and you know, we talk about cannabis and you know, obviously we're passionate about cannabis, but you know, speaking there from the beginning, what you're speaking about was, you know, back then, you know, owning a business wasn't so sexy, right? I mean, I always talk about my generation saw that kind of transition from, you know, having normal phones, rotary phones, and then finally get a, you know, wireless phone, and you get a voicemail, and then my dad had one of the car phones, and then, you know, the pagers, and now all of a sudden all the kids, they just have, you know, they have the iPhones in their hand. So I saw this.
Yes.
I saw that transition. And you're talking about this. You saw another kind of transition there where it was like, you know, you're hard at work. My dad owns a business. You know, there's not really that much sexy about it, right? And now it's become a thing where, you know, entrepreneurship, startups, it's become a whole thing in and of itself that I think, you know, is amazing to live in. And then you also see something that people make it something maybe that it isn't, or people get lost in that kind of culture, or I guess, you know, trying to look as hype of it all and trying to look a certain way. Can you talk about that? Like kind of that transition, was that kind of your experience as well that you saw like kind of happen?
I don't think I've heard it communicated that way, but what you're saying, I think is spot on. So right now it's cool and trendy, and that's okay to be entrepreneurship. I think in some ways we all need to, out of necessity, especially with COVID and because of the global economy that when, as they say, if China sneezes, America gets a cold.
Yeah.
So I think it behooves everybody to have an entrepreneurial mindset, whether you work for a large company or on your own, have your own business. I mean, you know, every Uber driver has two or three side hustles. Yeah, and in LA, everybody has three or four side hustles.
Yeah.
So I think it's a necessity. But yes, there's also kind of it's cool now. I think my experience in being an entrepreneur is kind of accidental. But it was purposeful. So in some ways, I kind of think that the world is kind of caught up to what, as you described, in my experience, we just did out of necessity. You know, my dad was just, it wasn't cool. You were self-employed. All his friends were self-employed. They had print shops. They had painting companies. They had landscaping company. Very blue collar, but they could take care of their families in those days if your business was decent size. So I didn't know any other way. If anything, the rich kids, so to speak, quote unquote, wealthy ones, you know, their parents worked for companies or corporations or they had much larger businesses. So I didn't know any other way. And then, yeah, fast forward, it's called entrepreneurship. There's some research behind it. You get professors in schools actually teaching it as a discipline. Uh-huh. And then it became more acceptable. So I don't complain that it's cool now. I think it's a good mindset to have. But yes, there are those that are got the cell phones and just grew up with them and don't realize that, you know, that is a sign of wealth. That is a sign of success. But, you know, if you're 10 years old and you got a cell phone, it's not a big deal. I remember when my dad got his first computers in the office. It was two computers, I think, one for the accountant and one for the inventory person. It was two computers and it was going to be a $20,000 install. It was a big deal. Going to take a week, $20,000 for two PCs.
Wow. What year was that?
I'm afraid to say. Late 80s.
Okay.
Late 80s, man. Not too bad, yeah. Not too bad. My dad, the janitorial business was going high tech. Two computers, 20 grand, and like a week and a half implementation. It was a joke.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, now I'm certain that our cell phone had 20 times the power of those two computers.
Oh, man, it's so funny. I mean, and I love that too. You know, I'm grateful. I'm so grateful for that, you know, that transition, because I grew up in the same kind of way, in the sense that, you know, my dad owning stores, owning different businesses, and being able to see him and being able to be that sponge, and him taking me with him to the corporate meetings.
Yes.
Me working the cashier, and then me going to the corporate meetings and seeing two grown men yelling at each other, screaming at each other, and then afterwards grab a beer, baby. You want a scotch? You know, whatever else it is, you know. And
yes.
It's just business. What's the problem? You know, and seeing, okay, cool. This is the way it is. It's not personal. Okay, you know, and you get to learn those kind of ropes like that.
I went through a lot of schooling, but that my base was solid, because I was the same way. I saw my dad interact with customers and then or potential clients, etc. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards he would deconstruct it for me. He says, okay, with that guy, he would compliment me or criticize me about if I talked too much or said too much, because inevitably they want to know, why is this kid hanging around, right? They start talking to me. And sometimes, you know, they're trying to get information about what's going on. And I knew at an early age, mirror my dad and what was said or not unsaid, because this is business. So I wouldn't trade that for anything. And my mom, we always had a business line in the house. So we had two lines, which is really high tech, you know, to have two lines in the house at the time. And one was the professional line, and my mom would answer it. And, you know, Gerald's janitorial service, when he had a janitorial company, then it became Gerald's, you know, janitorial supply or whatever, my dad. And so she was the front office, man, until we got a real office. So I watched her, and she would help with their books, and she did the invoices. I wouldn't trade that for anything. It gives you an appreciation. And now that I'm on the other side of it, you know, working on behalf of companies or within companies, it does, as I'm sure with you, when you're going in, especially a company with transition or they're having problems, you realize, wait a minute, these are families. Behind this person at the desk or behind every employee, you know, it could be children, family, and your decisions impacts them. So I see it as in leadership with any kind of business, that it's a responsibility to be taken seriously, because lives can be impacted positively or negatively based on what you're doing.
Yeah, and like I said, invaluable upbringing, valuable experiences. But you also have that experience, like we were saying, of being a business owner and, you know, being the C-suite, right? Can you talk about the difference with that? And not only that, but what's the difference between the C-suite and is there a difference in any other industry and in the cannabis industry that you've seen with that as well?
So you mean, is there a difference between being in the C-suite versus being a company owner?
No. Yeah. I mean, that not so much that, like being, you know, being the CEO of a, you know, a medical technology company and being the CEO of a cannabis company, you know, technology or research company. Are there differences in that just in general? Is it just kind of like, you know, business as usual stuff that you can, you can apply in different things, and certain things are like, this is not the way it would have been.
Got it. Another industry. Got it. I would answer that with a qualifier. I would add that is a different level of complexity with the cannabis businesses, because it's an industry that's still starting and still growing and trying to figure themselves out. Uh-huh. So I would say, yes, the fundamentals of business are the fundamentals. I would say 80-20. They call it what, the Pareto principle. Mm-hmm. You know, 80% is kind of similar. You know, you have executive leadership, you have management, you have finance, accounting, marketing, etc. You know, regardless of what the industry may be.
Yeah.
And then the 20% is what makes it unique to this industry or this company. So for us, we say, okay, the unique part is we're in cannabis. But cannabis is very unique to tobacco or alcohol in that it's regulated. Mm-hmm. So there's some overlap there. I think what makes cannabis way more unique is that, one, we're coming from an area sort of like alcohol back in the 30s, where it has been associated with a lot of stigma Mm-hmm. I also think it's unique that the stigma has also been associated with people of color and minorities, I think we'll probably get into later. And thirdly, like any new industry, and this is where it's an overlap with Silicon Valley or technology or any startup, is that you have all these people in a similar industry that really don't have a legal, a large affinity group, meaning that we don't have players in the industry that have been in the business for 20, 15, 20, 30 legal years.
Yeah,
legal.
Exactly. Traditional marketing, we call it.
Marketing. Yeah, and operations. That creates, it's a different environment when you're trying to, because ultimately for this industry to grow, as a company to grow, you have to venture with people. You have to partner with others. And because everyone is kind of unknown, and some are coming out of the shadows and some are coming from other industries, it makes for strange bedfellows at times. Sometimes it works, but a lot of times when it's new, there's a lot of chaos. There's people that you really don't want to play with, or protocols and standards haven't been set up yet. Who figures them out? Who do you listen to when they suggest a particular industry standard? So all of that, I think, is makes you cannabis a little bit more unique. Our regulations are new. It's been illegal. Stigmas. The people representing the industry haven't necessarily represented the industry in the past. Not a mm-hmm. bad thing. It's just what is. Mm-hmm. So we do have some very unique, challenges and opportunities within cannabis for sure.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned something there is, you know, the two different worlds combining, right? Where here's these, you know, old heads, whatever, you know, who've been in the industry, you know, growing for 30, 40 years, and they know how to keep a low profile and how to just go about their business. And they're not into, you know, SOPs and marketing and everything, like, you know,
it's like not at all,
you know, and you know, they're like, hell no, you know, you're lucky, you know, my name, you're lucky, you know, anything else like that, you know, if you got a picture,
that's right,
you know, that's I must be really close if you got a picture of me, you know, because there's no picture of me,
right,
you know, and right, sometimes you have people coming in who have all the good funding, and they come in, well, there's a great market opportunity, you know, and they come with that kind of thing. And now we all have to play together in a new legal framework that hasn't been set up for long at all. And we're still trying to feel through the dark as well. And we, you know, something may be one way one week, and the next week it's something else. And it's when we have a lot of put out a lot of fires, and, you know, like you said, the personality types are very different. You know, that's something you see playing a role as well in what's going on, you mentioned?
I'd like to think I'm playing a role in smoothing that transition. I mean, I personally had to adjust myself because of just the different, the different players in the industry. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time, until recently, I spent a lot of time in Chicago, and I would just kind of come back and forth to the West Coast. I'd fly back and forth to Colorado, Washington, Oregon, the legal states, primarily California. And I recall the first few times I was going to Colorado, because it was the first adult use state, of course. And I couldn't get into dispensaries. I would show up to meet somebody, and people thought I was the feds. I remember one in particular. It didn't
help. You didn't have the vibe.
I was looking too corporate, man. Yeah. I was coming in. I had, you know, I'm coming from the Midwest, so I had slacks on, a dress shirt. I do wear Ray-Ban aviators, which is G-Man standard issue, right? I just happen to wear aviators. So I show up one day. It was on 420. I knew the owner, and he says, hey, go by my shop. I'm going to hook you up, all right? So this is several years ago. So I go to the shop. I show up in an SUV because, you know, that's what I was driving at the time. So think about it. I'm looking at a
big black SUV.
You can't look.
You know, in the suit, coming in. Like
with aviators,
with aviators.
I'm coming in a big Denali, SUV, and I'm wearing slacks and a shirt, looking like club fed. The security steps out with his automatic at the time, because it was 420, so they had a lot of traffic, so they had extra security. And man, he looked at me like I was a G-man for sure. And then when I got to LA, I couldn't get into certain dispensaries. The spotters would call the owners like, who is this guy? You know, we don't recognize him. So I learned to kind of dress, when I say dress down, I don't mean to sound condescending, but get rid of the dress shirt, man. I just got rid of it. So when I would visit a company or I was working on their behalf, I would say, give me your company swag. It's because I want to swag rather. And I want your cap. I want your shirt.
Yeah.
I left the dress shoes at home.
Part of the team.
then I could walk in and I could have conversations with the dispensary owners or growers. But before that, yeah, it was, and the irony was not lost on me that here I'm in middle age, a man of color, and people are thinking that I'm 5'0". That was
yeah, funny. Right? That's funny, man. That's funny. You know, it's like, excuse me, sir, can I please get some of your finest marijuana, please? How much pots can I buy with $25, you know?
Exactly. I probably was looking pretty green. Yeah, looking pretty square. But in answer to your question, yeah, that's when you're going to people, yeah, the old heads, the OGs, been growing for years, they had a right to be suspicious. Mm-hmm. And I credit some of them trying to come over into the legal side. But that's a big transition for them. Mm-hmm. And then you have guys like me that see this as partially, not completely, but guys like me that see it like, okay, here's a new industry, a new market, and I can utilize my expertise and my network to, you know, provide funding and acumen to a new industry. So that's one crowd. And then you have another crowd that sees it as just, you know, it's just a pure opportunity. They're coming from consumer products or they're high finance. So you have all these groups that are kind of getting thrown together because of this law changes, and it's a work in progress.
100%. It is, you know, a growing industry doesn't have that much history. And I want to talk about the diversity issue. There's so much to talk about there. But before we transition to that, you know, you mentioned there about, you know, people coming in, you know, with the funding and everything like that. And you see in the industry, there's a lot of companies coming in that they have all the funding, they have all the business fundamentals, they have everything look like it's set up, they have their dispensaries all across the country or anything else, any kind of distribution. Huge companies, and then they don't make it, right? Or you see, you know, they're making the news for all the wrong reasons, you know?
Yes.
And what do you think that, what do you think's behind that? You know, I mean, they have everything. Yeah. Is it just, you know, I'll just let you answer that. What's the reason behind that?
It's not a silver bullet answer on that one. It's a couple of things, but I think I can narrow it down to two. One is that, I hope it's obvious that just having a lot of money doesn't mean you're going to be successful. Uh-huh. It really doesn't. The corollary to that is if you look at Silicon Valley, which has always been kind of my model for the past 20 years, I know people that live there, work there, and I keep track of their business modeling innovations, because it is, they're innovative in a business model. Uh-huh. And what you'll see there, and I think they're spot on, is that the last thing you do, even if it's a great idea, you got a great team, you just don't give them too much money. Because what will you do? You'll spend it versus you'll throw money at it versus addressing the problem mentally or with a market focus. So too much money, I think what we're seeing in cannabis is too much money, or having a lot of money all at once. That's not going to mean you have an advantage. Mm-hmm. Two is on the operation side. I actually think operations are quite lacking in this industry. I don't think the industry lacks for smart people. Are people that were experienced elsewhere and maybe had success elsewhere, but that doesn't mean a thing in cannabis, because in cannabis you're dealing with regulations that change after you get the job or the role, labeling, state-wise, federal changes, you know, from the executive suite on down as to if, you know, we have the confidence to operate in a manner, knowing that it's going to be thinking that it's going to be nationalized at one time. The typical business manager or executive does not have to deal with that, with the shadowy regulations or being restricted to one state even. I think that in itself makes it way more complicated to operate as a successful enterprise. Because in America, obviously, you set up a business, you can do business in Arkansas, Texas, California, wherever you want.
Yeah.
So if your supplier, you have a critical supplier, and one supplier is based in New York City and another one's based in North Dakota, all things being equal, your supplier in North Dakota, it might be less expensive from a shipping standpoint. You don't get that kind of scale in cannabis. You have to stay, everything has to be within the state for the most part, which makes it a more complex business. So I would argue that operations, not because of lack of ability or lack of talent, but that operations are more critical in the cannabis space, and it has to be learned on the fly because the regulations are such, state and national, that it adds a layer of complexity that makes it more difficult for a team to do well. So you can have a whole lot of money, you can have a great license and a great territory, but because of the legal idiosyncrasies of this industry and otherwise, and the culture of the people that we spoke to a few minutes ago, the different groups that are all getting thrown together, it makes it way more complex. And I think that's the smoking gun, that if you can solve that, we'll see some successful companies come out of that.
Wow. Yeah, there's a couple of great points. And, you know, one thing that you mentioned, I never thought of it in that way. And I think, you know, everybody in the industry is kind of under a microscope, because first of all, we don't have that much of a track record, obviously. And
right,
you know,
right.
So historically, there's not much to go off of. But, you know, you mentioned there about Silicon Valley, and I never really made that connection. It's such a great analogy, because, you know, we talk about a well-funded startup, and what's the first thing that they get? You know, they get a game room, right? They get they get their 2 p.m., you know, cocktail hour, and
yes.
the kegerator, and the,
yes.
and the, you know, the board games, and, you know, everything else that goes along, because you want to keep them in there working. You want people
yes.
happy and not having turnover. You know, you want, right. you know, it's the getting the right
You
talent.
Want the best programmers. You're
yeah,
fighting
you
for talent.
Programs.
So yeah, you're fighting for the best programmers.
Keep them there, you know, but so the burn rate's so high, right? The burn rate is so high and everything, but I never really made that connection with cannabis as well, that, you know, it's people, they're trying to compete and also looking for that talent, I guess.
I'd like to think so. I'd like to, I don't know. You know, I think you bring up a good point, Maynard. Are we really throwing money at a lot of talent? I don't know. I actually think cannabis, one of the great things about cannabis is you actually do have a lot of people that want to be in it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it lacks for people to get in, or rather it doesn't, you don't lack for people that are interested in the industry. Now, are they the people that you need at this time in leadership? I think there might be a little bit tougher. And I think we're seeing that. I think we're seeing, you know, some of it is typical transitions from an early industry, from the founders to the, you know, professional management class, quote unquote, and that could be good or bad. But I do think that maybe some of the people that are needed in cannabis are frankly just not ready for it yet, because they are concerned about the stigma. And those that have lots of experience don't necessarily want to trade that in for the hassles that you have in this cannabis space. So I think there's some on the sidelines kind of doing a wait and see. But as you well know, the industry is growing, the demand is growing. You need people in this space. So do you go with people that maybe are not as experienced, or do you wait, or do you try to spend more money with people that you know can, that have a higher probability of being successful? I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that, but to the extent that you're just dealing with people that just want to be in the game, want to be in the industry, but they don't necessarily have the acumen that you could get if you were just a traditional, I don't know, motor parts company, then I think that requires stronger leadership, because then guess what? You're leading and you're training, you're coaching, which any good leader should do anyway. But I think there's a much greater need in the cannabis space to really train, mentor, coach people in their roles, because guess what? No one was doing this legally 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the ones that could easily transition from another industry into this and really help it take off, they're probably not ready yet. They're probably still like, nah, I'm just going to stay where I am, and let's wait until it goes federally legal, nationalized, and then maybe I'll come in. Well, I hope by that time that we have a lot more leaders and people in the industry that have the experience and have grown into their roles, that we can just tell those people, well, you know what, you just got to stay over there. We got this.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see.
And yeah, you know, you mentioned too, you know, what the passion that's behind cannabis, that people want to get into it. You mentioned, you know, motor parts. Maybe people aren't so passionate about motor parts. Maybe some people are, right? But, you know, talk about the regulations that, you know, you compare us to, you know, alcohol, tobacco, you know, cannabis, because of the regulations, everything goes on like that. But,
yes,
you know, even the passion that goes towards, you know, tobacco is not the same as cannabis. People just love
Correct.
It. This is just like, you know, people have been fighting for this for a long time. But then, you know, you mentioned, you know, transitioning there, you know, about how trying to get the right talent and are they the right talent and the leadership, and what you see in cannabis, and, you know, there's some people have been doing studies on it recently, is the amount of turnover that goes on in the industry from the bottom on up, you know, from your bud tender, you know, all the way up to the C-suite, you know, how much
yes.
the turnover really is. Is that something that you see in other industries, or, you know, is that something that coincides with something you've brought up already, or is that another issue?
I think the turnover that you're seeing were a lot of companies that were flush with cash, Canadian cash, you know, the Canadian IPO market was not last summer, the summer before. Uh-huh. A lot of them went IPO. They had cash. They were using that cash from the public markets to invest in the United States and in California in particular. So I think that provided much needed liquidity or cash for the industry. I think a lot of that money was blown on, let me put it this way. I think some of that money was not necessarily utilized in the best way. So I think that's unique to cannabis, that we just had a flush of cash. You can't go to a traditional bank. So what do? You overspend, you overbuild.
Okay.
And now we're having layoffs because it just, things weren't done right. Uh-huh. That being said, any industry, and this is where cannabis is just, remember I was talking about the 80-20, here's the 80%.
Yeah.
Every industry, especially when they're starting off, they kind of move in fits and starts. They make a lot of progress, there's a retraction, they move forward, there's a retraction, because we don't have it figured out yet. So I think some of the layoffs, some of the transition is expected, but I do think it's been exacerbated by the influx of cash via the Canadian markets. And now we have, we had our vape crisis, could have happened anytime last mm-hmm. fall. And now we're at a time of COVID where mm-hmm. it's reconstructing our business model. So in answer to your question, I think it's a little bit of both. I think some of it is unique to cannabis that because of our high turnover, because of the way the money was spent and a lot of the people that received that money just didn't have the experience that was needed with the idiosyncrasies of cannabis. But some of it is just, it's just the nature of business. You know, we're all trying to figure it out. So you grow and then you retract. Retract.
And we say that a lot. You know, you mentioned the vape and obviously, you know, COVID, and you see the influx of in the industry everywhere, right? From growing, you know, they have to cap all the applications, everything, you know, dispensaries, and, you know, talk about LA, how most of the dispensaries are black market, and, you know, and how
yes.
People can't, weren't able to even operate beforehand, let alone with Corona, you know, coming in and, you know, at least, I guess it was deemed essential business, which we'll get into as well in another topic, you know, but, you know, so it's kind of correcting the market a little bit in a lot of ways, where you said people are not able to stick around any longer, providing opportunity for others who are able to pivot and transition and adapt. But something else is, and this is what I really want to talk about as well. I guess, you know, I'm not going to drop any knowledge. Everybody here on the podcast, you know, we're passionate about the cannabis industry. It's not unique or, you know, it's not brand new to know that cannabis inherently, started off, with the war on drugs, you know, a racist system, you know, perpetuated against certain types of people, and even going all the way back to prohibition, you know, aside yes. from the fact that, you know, it was hemp and cannabis, everything is, was threatening big businesses in a lot of different ways, right? The textile companies, the lumber companies, but it was associated then at that point, you know, how do they stigmatize it? We talk about the stigma was with race.
Yes.
You know? And
primarily,
marijuana, yes. even that term, you know, and the stigma all across, even up to now, you know, the DARE program, you know, from a decade or two ago, and everything else. But we see as well in practice that we talk about essential business and then there's people sitting in jail, right? And we talk about the war on drugs and we talk about how people are coming into the business who didn't really, participate in fighting for it. And now they're coming with the money while people are sitting in jail.
Yes,
about it,
yes.
What's your view on that? And, you know, kind of what can we do about that from the top on down?
I'll start with the last part. What can we do? I know there's some great policy groups that are working on that in D.C. on a macro level and locally. And I applaud their efforts. Personally, I would like to see more on the private side, just from the C-suite and the companies. There's one thing to have a lobbying group. I don't think the lobbying group reflects everyone as well as it can. I think they're trying, but I think that's another detailed subject. And I applaud their efforts, but I think individual companies have to bear that responsibility at the executive level. Cannabis has been even the term marijuana, as you pointed out, has been overwhelmingly the growth of this industry before prior to legalization has been born on the backs of people of color, brown and black people, and they're still in jail, still in prison. And the ones that get out can't even properly apply for a license now that it's legalized, unfortunately, because they had a prior. It's Jim Crow all over again. Yeah. You know, back in the 60s when people of color finally got rights to vote, and it was ruled unconstitutional to not allow people in the South to vote. You know what they did? They created tests and said, okay, well, if you own property, if you own land in this county, then you can vote. Or if you pass a literacy test, now you can vote. Well, of course, you're the bottom of the barrel. You didn't own land, so that would disqualify you. You weren't particularly educated because you had to go to terrible schools, and that would DQ you. And this is happening at a state level. Well, if you got a felony, if you did trafficking, blah, 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 you can't get into it. So what does it leave? Legally, it keeps a lot of people out of the industry.
Yeah.
So that is well known. But it's not just people of color. I mean, it's and this is when we talk about the different groups in cannabis that now have to play together. You know, a lot of them are not, some of the growers in NorCal, they're not brown or black. Mm-hmm. But they operated in the shadows for their various reasons. And I'll never forget the most powerful story. My first dispensary in Colorado, the woman happened to be Caucasian. And when I was visiting her dispensary, she teared up and talking about her brother, because she said he was in Club Fed during federal time. And she said, I could easily have been in his shoes, but I just happened to be a little bit later than him. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. You know, she wasn't brown, she wasn't black, but she was dealing with it as well. We have an incarceration problem in this country, and which is really the macro issue. We just lock people up too quick. Yeah. And so in our industry, unfortunately, it's representing, I think, the stigmas that kind of got us here. You know, 50, 60 years of selective laws to marginalize already marginalized groups, and it's reflected in our industry. So I think the responsibility is going to come on a company by company level to not just go out and check a box and hire people, women or LGBT, whatever, or brown and black. No, not checking a box, but really seek a diversity of opinion, have a diverse social group. And I think that's represented in the companies. Once you start hiring, I think it's a reflection of leadership. That's what I see. If I see everyone one way, be it all men of color or all women, or anything else, it's a reflection of leadership. If everyone looks the same, thinks the same, and acts the same. And that's diversity. It's just more empowering, period.
It is. And, you know, you share a lot of powerful topics there, you know, talking about the legislation side and, you know, the social equity side, you know, and a lot of work still needs to be done there. And, you know, obviously a lot of issues having to be done with that as well. Like you said, a lot of details that go along with it, but there isn't, you know, we talk about like, you know, what is missing there. There's no reason why we shouldn't see more people of color in the C-suites. There's nothing there stopping. Like you said, it shouldn't be a box, right? You know, like in the NFL, they have to hire the
Rooney Rule.
The Rooney Rule.
They have to interview. The Rooney Rule. Yeah, they have to interview one person of color.
I got two. You know, it's what do you want from me? You know, he didn't get the job when everybody knew who was going to get the job beforehand. So it's like, you know, it's a slap in the face, right? Well, I tried.
Right.
Know?
Right,
you know, that kind of thing. So it shouldn't be like that. I mean, it's honestly, you know, it's bullshit in so many ways that it's still even a topic. It shouldn't even be an issue one way or the other, right?
Right.
It shouldn't be an issue one way or the other. You know, it's just like it's all culture. We all have a different viewpoint and everything, and it doesn't matter what color a person is in general, anyways.
Right.
Especially in a, like we were talking about in an industry that. So much money has been made off the backs and off the incarceration and everything else of brown and black people. It's not like we're demanding, hey, now's our time. You have to hire us. It's just a matter of, you know, look at the numbers, go to any convention. You will see it for yourself. It's right there, you know? And, you know, is that something that just, you know, you're talking about the, from different businesses in your background. Is that something that once again, is you just see, and different types of businesses as well, that we need more diversity in general in C-suites? Or is it something in particular to cannabis? Or maybe there's a different nuanced topic, why it's applied in different ones?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it's unique to cannabis. I think you see that everywhere, the C-suite, and not just the C-suite, the board of directors. It's very homogenous across all many industries. Uh-huh. And then you'll see women or people of color, you know, they'll get a marketing role or they get the sales role. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that because they're integral. They're important in our business. But I think it's across all industries. I think where cannabis is unique is that, again, we already know that the social impact people of color were overrepresented on the penal side.
Yeah.
And incarceration. And since we know that, and now that it's finally legal, I do think cannabis industry and cannabis leaders should, if they really respect their history and respect the time, this wonderful time that we are in the legal cannabis space, that they would make an extra effort to bring everybody to the table. But that's still depending on somebody else. If you're somebody in that underrepresented group and you're trying to get in, you're kind of dependent on someone else to bring you in. But here's the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship's open to everybody. Uh-huh. And I was fortunate enough to happen to already be interested in it and to study it academically for my own personal reasons. And then the world kind of caught up to, hey, this entrepreneurship thing's kind of pretty cool. So I don't want to sound like I foresaw all of this 20 years ago. But where we are right now is that entrepreneurship is a discipline. It's easier to become an entrepreneur and start a company with technology that you mentioned. You know, everybody has a cell phone. You can get apps for everything and any ancillary service you require. So I think this is a great time to promote, encourage entrepreneurs and people that have that mindset and either hire them or to do business with them. So that's why, frankly, you know, to this day, I just give a lot of my time, not a lot, but if it fits within my wheelhouse and I have the time for it, I'll talk to people that have an idea or a business plan or seeking capital, et cetera. Because ultimately, you get one or two successful companies, be it a woman, minority, whatever their factor is, they become successful. There's going to be a lot more people just like them. You know, we were talking about Michael Jordan at the beginning, you know, kind of just warming up, talking about The Last Dance. Who in the 1984 or 1985 would think that a basketball shoe that kids would be buying them and lining up for them to pay $200 for them, he would become a billionaire over a basketball shoe or even the basketball game? What did it take? It took one person to be excellent. And then it creates a whole cottage industry and a bunch of people. So I think if we, whatever group that's underrepresented right now, once they have success as a company or as a leader, that will spawn many others. So, ultimately the responsibility comes to us individually. Do we want to look like everybody else, be like everybody else? Mm-hmm. Or do we want to make the world a little bit better? And the way you make it better is to be the best that you can be. And guess what? There'll be a lot of people that'll follow. So that's what I try to do. I try to encourage entrepreneurship. Obviously I try to better myself in every opportunity that I have. There's something to be learned from it. And hopefully more of us will take on that task and that personal responsibility and make it an industry that really reflects our core and who we really are.
Man, I love that point.
Or should be.
Yeah, no, I love that point because, you know, obviously we do need to have help, you know, and we do need to kind of force the issue a little bit. Like you said, some of it does fall on our shoulders. A lot of it falls on our shoulders. You know, for me, I'm personally not looking for help. You know, I don't look at myself as any better or any worse than anybody else. I'm just a Maynard. And, you know, I put my head down and work as hard as I can and build relationships and, you know, deliver and do as good of a job as a service and as a company as we can do. And it seems to work out for us in that regard, you know. And so I appreciate that as well, you know, talking about how, you know, Michael Jordan with the shoes and, you know, look at what LeBron has taken that to a next level, you know, whereas MJ wanted to do the business. He didn't want to be the, you know, political and going in there and social stuff. He was like, hey, man.
That's true. He did. He did.
And LeBron's taking it to the next level. And he opened that trail for him, you know. And then we talk about other areas, you know, with Dre and Dre Beats, you know, and how, you know, it could have been anybody on the route. I think Quincy was first offered that. And he's like, oh, man, I turned that down. It became Beats by Dre. You know, it sounds a little bit different.
Yeah.
Like Quincy Beats by Dre. And now that's how he became a billionaire. And, you know, and that's opening up the doors for others as well. So now is that, you know, obviously it's a small sample size and, you know, it's, like we said, it's new industry. So not too much history, but in your experience, do you see the trend going that way? I mean, you think in cannabis, we're very progressive people. We have an open mind in general, just to be in the industry. You know, is that something you see a trend? Is that something that would be a consequence of that kind of mentality? Or is it something that, you know, you're just kind of seeing stagnant right now or still?
When you say a trend, you're referring to a trend as far as more diversity and representation?
Yeah, more diversity.
Okay. Unfortunately, no. I don't think I don't think it's strong enough to call it a trend. I think there's more coming in, but I think that's just a reflection of just more cannabis companies. And each year cannabis gets a little bit bigger and some more people are underrepresented people are showing up. But no, I frankly think, I think some of the industry leaders could do a lot more, but I don't, they're not going to change because Galen Williams is sitting out here, you know, talking about it. I think my framework is if I'm successful enough, the Galen and the Maynards of the world keep talking and become successful, that there will be others that will gravitate towards us and will spawn other industries. But yes, I'm still going to, you know, beat the drum when it's appropriate, but I don't know. I don't think it's there yet at all. I think there's some good groups that have, even though they don't have that representation per se visually, that they're aware of it and they want to do something different about it. But I don't know why it hasn't happened for them, but I know there's some good people that are trying. But I do think it comes down, it starts with leadership. It really does. You know, when I started my first Angel Network group in grad school, this is 2006, 2007 in Chicago. The original two people were myself and someone from Silicon Valley who happened to be Indian. We had a woman of color. We had a staunch Republican conservative who's very vocal out there on the blogs and very opinionated. Mm-hmm. We had a libertarian, pretty much a political perspective. And we had someone that was kind of politically agnostic. What I'm saying is we had a diverse group of people. I was kind of the first one, you know, I was the first executive director of that group, but that group was a reflection, I'd like to think, of me a little bit. And we didn't look the same. We didn't think the same. And politically we were not the same. But when we started off, we had a few boxes checked, quote unquote. So, and it was very, it was natural. I didn't seek out to say, okay, I got to have a woman here. I got to have a woman of color. Yeah. All right, I got two boxes checked. Yeah. No, she was interested in entrepreneurship. She had a great corporate background. And she, you know what? She asked. That's what she did. Mm. Her name is Sharon. She's my classmate. Shout out. What's up, Sharon? I won't put out your last name. But she asked to be part of it. And I said, yeah. I just said yes. You know, she wanted to be part of the group. And that's how she got in. So there is personal responsibility to get into these groups. But I also think the leadership has to just be open. And if you're only hanging out with the same three people that you played golf with, surfed with, or go to shows with, and you only want, you can, without diligence, without thinking about it, you can easily have a company that is just like you and your three friends. Yeah. And you can be the best person ever.
Yeah.
So I think we have to, in summary, I think leadership has to, if it's not a natural predisposition, you have to get out of your comfort zone and seek it. Or if it's your natural disposition, like I like to think that it was for me, it'll happen because you're in a leadership role. And then there's personal responsibility individually, the Galens and the Maynards of the world, to go out there and just try to make it happen and ask for it, ask for a seat at the table and earn it.
100%, 100%. And I love that, you know, like I said, I love that because we can't control other people, like you said, us talking about it. Maybe it's putting out something in the universe. The vibration is changing.
I'm putting it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it out, man.
But we can't control other people's viewpoints.
Right, right.
We can't demand them. When we force people, it just only breeds more resistance. You know, we're finding that. But what we can do, like you said, is not only, you know, ask for a place at the table, you know, and deliver, but also bring on mentors, you know, mentorship, you know, everything like that, and helping people. I think a lot of people don't even know how to go about it. Very talented people and everything, and having mentors, and like you said, having those committees, everything. It's so important to help people, the next generation. Like we're talking about, you know, your dad, entrepreneurship wasn't the thing, and then here you are, entrepreneur school, and it is a thing, right? And down the line, you know, the next generation, we're gonna see, you know, God willing, it's gonna be a whole different set of people in these positions, you know, in the diversity.
Oh, for sure. It will happen. It will happen, absolutely. Just if we can speed it up, then more power to us.
Exactly. Again, very good. I know that you have a lot of things you know, I'm not sure what you can disclose, not disclose, but I have exciting stuff coming up. So, you know, what you can share, what do we have in store in the future with Galen Williams?
Ooh, what do we have in store? The future. Well, some of that is dependent on others. So I'll do what I'm responsible for. But I do think, COVID has really shown us some positive things about the industry to be excited about. To be qualified as an essential business when everybody was busting their ass, not only 4 or 5 years ago, just to show that, hey, there's some additional benefits to this. Mm-hmm. To now be considered essential in many states is a big deal.
It's a big,
very big deal.
Big win.
Because there's so many people that are hurting right now that have lost industries. It's going to take a long time to come back. But yet, we still have people buying cannabis and require cannabis. And
numbers are up, you know.
The numbers are up. Yes, yes. So without going into too many details, I think it's introduced some ancillary, I think it's added some potential business model changes because of COVID, because of the way we're doing business, you know, more remote, that will present some opportunities for the industry that I'm really excited about and want to participate in. But this industry is not going anywhere. I think we're showing that we can weather a downturn, but demand it's kind of like alcohol has been traditionally, inelastic. Mm-hmm. You know, people may buy a cheaper brand, but they don't stop buying.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big indicator for us. And I think that's a good, it should give us confidence, those of us in the industry, that it will be around. And so for the talented people that are nervous, you know, you can come over and work in the cannabis industry, and those in the cannabis industry that are really serious about making this a career, making it a difference, alleviating the stigma, maximizing representation for people that have traditionally been kept out of commerce and leadership roles, especially too. I think this is an opportunity for us to really expand our wings, and a lot of good companies. I'll go back to Silicon Valley. A lot of the big tech companies that we take for granted now, really came into their own during downtimes because it quieted things. The noise was mitigated. Before the vape crisis, before COVID, there was a lot of noise in the industry last summer. Now, unfortunately, some people are falling away. Some people are getting laid off. So there's a recalibration taking place, but the results should be a much stronger industry, stronger players, stronger operators. And that means there's opportunity for those of us that are serious about this.
I agree with that 100%. You know, just,
that's a lot of talking to not tell you what I'm really going to do next. But
it's all good. You know, by the time this thing comes out, we'll probably be able to have something else going on that we're able to link here. So
I'll keep you posted, Maynard.
Yeah, exactly.
I punted on that one a little bit. I tried to. Yeah, but things. Good things ahead. Good things ahead.
I'm excited. To hear it. And you know, like you said, this industry isn't going anywhere. And Galen Williams in the industry isn't going anywhere either. That's for sure.
I don't plan on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't plan on it.
And we need more people like you. I love it. It's this has been an amazing conversation. And, you know, before I let you go, obviously, you know, my favorite question, everything, you know, hearing about your story and being able to obviously bring awareness is super important, you know, because I think stories are the most important thing, you know, in terms of entrepreneurship. But I always want to know from everybody that comes on, and I'm super interested in your answer, how you define success in general, whether it be professionally, personally, existentially, you know, what does success look like for you?
Oh man, we got to roll one, man, and have a couple hours to talk about that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's
I'm down for always... that. Well, you got to announce it. Hopefully, coming up, we'll bring you on to talk about that whole thing, and we'll have another two discussions.
Our next call, let's do it like later in the day, like 5 o'clock or so. I've got a stack of conference calls this afternoon, so we're not going to do it. But next time, we'll roll one and we'll talk about it. But it's a good question, man. It's a good question. You know, I'm working on it. I don't have the answer. I'm working on it like everybody else, man, trying to get through this, as one of my old classmates says, doing hard time on planet Earth, you know, trying to figure it out. But I do think success for me is, you know, how we talk about the industry being vertically integrated. That's the ideal. Oh, you got the grower, you got distribution, you got the retail, right? I think success for me is being interpersonally integrated, meaning that my personal life is not in conflict with my professional life, and that my interests are not in conflict with my abilities. So if there's something that I'm really interested in, and then I also have an acumen for, guess what? It becomes fun. That's, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
And if my personal life is supporting my professional life and my professional life is echoing my personal life, life is good, man. So, you know, if I'm just, so, you know, my, I know that's really abstract, but
no, that's why I said essentially. Those answers better than, you know, and it's great. Everybody has it. That's why I ask, because everybody has a different definition.
Yeah.
And it's also fluid, you know?
It is. And no one has it. I mean, I think we're all, and I've seen this recently in all due seriousness. I mean, with the COVID crisis, some people are doing better than others. And it's been tough. It's tough to observe and tough to see. Even us just having this conversation right now, you know, it's privilege. It really is privilege. But it's a tough thing to balance. It's a challenge for me, like everybody else. So if anyone's seeing this and it looks like I'm living the life, quote unquote, you know, everybody's got something to deal with. But I want a personal life, personal and professional life that's integrated, and to do something that I love, which I think I'm doing, but actually to excel in it. It's not work. What is, you know, that old adage where if you're doing what you love, it's not work. And you know, this is a part of a perfect day to be able to talk about an industry that I'm passionate about, hopefully being a promoter to doing better things within the industry. And the only thing is missing is you know, getting to the beachfront and watching my kids play on their own, leaving me alone. But I want them close.
Reason go.
But play. I want them close.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, just life on the beach, you know, and have a great family and be around people that you love, and working and professionally and being successful at it, promoting people become better personally and better professionally, as well as take some money off the table and you know, have some fun in life, man. That's, heck, if that ain't success, you know, then maybe I just need to quit right now. But that's the ideal. I'm going for it.
Well, that sounds pretty damn good to me, you know. And also, thank you for that. That was such an honest answer too, because I think it does catch a lot of people off guard. And some people just get right into, you know, and like I said, everybody is genuine in their own way. And everybody on here is genuine. And so
good.
Everybody has an answer. But you were like, hey, you know what? I don't know. But you know what? Vertically integrated, you know, I think what you're talking about is integrity, right? Do my values.
Yes. Match? Yes. That's it. Yes.
My values match what I'm doing. Can I wake up?
In personal the integrity.
And
yes.
Look in the mirror and, you know, but I'm excited to be here. And I'm so grateful, you know, we talk about hitting the right time, and you share the story of the woman whose brother is serving, you know, serving time there. And she's like, you know, if he would have came afterwards. I'm so grateful we live in this time, you know, we're here in this industry and it's growing, and we get to be leaders. We get to be somebody that, you know, it's just so young, and it's, you know, what's going to be, you know, 2012 in Colorado, what's going to be in another 8 years, you know, what's going to be another 20 years, you know, and we're just going to be around, God willing. So.
That's right. It's a privilege. We
get to not only wake up and love what we do, but it's fun. You know, it's fun, and it's such a pleasure. And it's been a pleasure having you on as well, Gannon.
Likewise, Maynard. Likewise, man. I'm glad we finally connected. I know we had some scheduling issues at first, but I think it's well worth it. It's all good. Speaking with you.
You're busy, and you know, one time it was like right before Passover, and I'm like, oh man, you know, everything is always. But you know what? Everything happens at the proper time, because now we get to have this.
Yes.
And you're right in the perfect position, I think. I think it would have been a different conversation we would have had if we would have had it.
For sure. Right. We're in the throes of COVID. Things are trying to open up a little bit. So, yes, it's a different conversation. So it's more timely. And I applaud your efforts in bringing people together and having them discuss for those that want to listen. So thank you.
Thank you, Galen. Now, as we close, you know, how can listeners find out more about you, connect with you?
LinkedIn. You can always catch me on LinkedIn, Galen Williams, G-A-L-E-N, last name Williams. I do get to them eventually. If you give a shout out and say, hey, you saw me on the Maynard Show, I'll move you up in the queue, and I will respond, I promise.
Sweet, Galen, you're the man. Really, really appreciate it. This has been so much fun. And so thanks for jumping on with me today, and thanks everybody wherever you are listening. A really great one. So good luck to you, Galen, the rest of 2020.
Thank you, Mayor.
Will do. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered.
feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacann.com. That's C-A-L-A-C-A-N-N.com. And follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.